much for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here. Today I will talk about three mechanisms to get dark matter much lighter than the weak scale without making it very weakly coupled. I will start with a very brief introduction of what we know about dark matter, or rather don't know about dark matter, and I will focus mainly on thermally produced relics. And then I will talk about these three mechanisms. Two are rather well known and were discussed first by Grist and Seckel in the early 90s, so forbidden channel annihilations and co-annihilation. And the third one, I think it's a new exception to the computation of the dark matter relic density, more or less on the same footing as what Grist and Seckel did, but it's new. And what's in common between all these three mechanisms is that I'm going to focus on this light dark matter parameter space, and I will show you that it's easy to have KV, even KV dark matter with large couplings to itself for the standard model. Okay, so having said this, let's start with this very basic introduction. As you know, the dark matter mass is something that we really don't know. There are order 80 orders of magnitude that it can span. The upper bound is observational and comes from searches for massless inside the galaxy. The lower bound is a little bit more fuzzy and comes from the fact that we have a model with dark matter as light as this that works. It's not completely clear whether one can go even below, but the de Broglie wavelength of dark matter at this mass starts to be of the order of the galaxy size, so there are obvious problems that one encounters. In any case, regardless of what's the precise value of this number, we have a huge parameter space open, and even if we restrict
to... say that it's 10 to the 30 solar masses versus...
This one, yes. It's the same, yes.
I thought it was like, has to be less than 100 solar masses from Max's
circuit. 100 solar, well...
That's okay.
I forget the precise number in solar masses, but whatever it is, it's this number in GeV. Yeah, so even if you restrict to particles that were in thermal contact with the standard model at some point or to fermions, the lower bound improves a little bit, but this huge parameter space remains open. And a similar situation is true for dark matter self-interactions. It might be that dark matter interacts only gravitationally with itself, or it might be that the interaction cross-section is much larger, corresponding roughly to a mediator of order KV mass with order 1 couplings. And again, the upper bound is observational and mainly comes from bullet cluster and comparison between simulation and observation for the shape of the dark matter galactic halos. So again, also here, we have something like 50 orders of magnitude open. And in principle, you would expect that model builders would go crazy into this huge parameter space and fill it densely with new models. But reality is a little bit different, as you know. And 80 to 90% of the literature is concentrated on a very narrow range with dark matter around the weak scale, with weak interactions and gravitational interactions. And of course, there are very good reasons for this. There's some theoretical bias due to the fact that many models that solve the hierarchy problem, dark matter candidates that look like this. And there is also another reason, which I'm going to briefly remind you, even though you certainly know about this, which is the so-called WIMP miracle. So if you write down the simplest possible Boltzmann equation for dark matter that is thermally produced, you can imagine that it annihilates via a 2-2-2 process. And then at some point, the rate of this annihilation is freezing out. And this determines the dark matter relic density today, which ends up being proportional to 1 over the annihilation cross-section. You plug in the measured value, and you get something of the order of the weak scale. And what I want to convince you during the talk, but maybe you don't need this convincing, is that this is not a miracle, and you can easily write down models that are as simple or even simpler than this that point to a completely different scale. So this is more of a coincidence of this particular choice of annihilation process rather than something that one could define a miracle. Okay, so having said this, one more slide on WIMPs and then I'm done. As you know, not only theorists have concentrated on this very much, but also experimentalists. And the result is that the parameter space for WIMPs is closing down slowly, and there are still many models that are alive, but many Z-portal models are already excluded, and even now we're probing X-portal models, even though not all of them. So the bottom line of this discussion is that it's totally reasonable to focus on different parameter space, and it's actually an interesting question of whether it's easy to get something at a completely different scale that is as simple as a WIMP, and maybe it's even thermally produced. And that's precisely what I'm gonna talk about today. But before doing that, let me briefly list all the most popular models for thermally produced dark matter in the literature and put them into this plane so that it will be very clear what's the difference between what already exists and what I'm gonna talk about today, even before I tell you about the explicit models that I have in mind. So we already talked about WIMPs up until now, and in this plane of dark matter mass and coupling of the dark matter to whatever it's annihilating into, WIMPs occupy a line of a fixed cross section that more or less is centered around couplings of the order of the weak coupling and masses of the order the weak scale. Semi-annihilations are slightly different. There are some details that are not the same as WIMPs, but parametrically they're the exact same thing and they live in this, on the same line of the plane. A very simple extension is the so-called WIMPless miracle. In this case, you're still fixing the annihilation cross-section, but you let the dark matter mass become much smaller, and at the same time, the coupling also becomes smaller.
By the way, what is the bound for streaming in that case? Because you cannot...
For WIMPless,
yeah.
Yeah, it's order a KE,
so I... it's around the KE.
Yeah, I stopped the plot there because for... I mean, whatever was in thermal contact with the standard model at some point should be heavier than a KV. Yeah, so this WIMPless story, as I said, is just as simple as fixing the cross section and making everything smaller, and it can be realized in different ways. You can just have an heavy mediator, or you can do something more clever and have gauge mediation talk to the standard model and some other hidden sectors at the same time so that all the coupling to mass ratios are fixed. But this doesn't change the parameter space, which is again just an extension of the WIMP line. If you want to go to something more exotic that's becoming popular in the last couple of years, you can look at SIMPs. In this case, what's set in the dark matter relic density are 3-2 annihilations. Again, you have lines on this plane because you are still fixing the annihilation cross section, but now the parametric dependence on coupling and mass is a bit different. So these lines have a different slope and are offset compared to the WIMP. Something I didn't say is what this gray area is, and this is what's excluded from self-interactions. However, it's really an exclusion only if this coupling is the same for annihilations and self-interactions, and this is not the case for SIMP. So I'm not saying that SIMP is completely excluded except for this tiny.
They're
a bit hard pressed to make it work. I think there is at least one or two models for 3-2 that work, but I don't know of anything that works for 4-2. But in any case, I mean, you have to do some gymnastics to make SIMP work. What I'm going to show you today lives in a similar parameter space, but it's way, way simpler to realize. And so before showing you that, one last review slide. I mentioned here also non-abelian dark matter because it looks a bit different than these lines. And the only difference is that you're imagining that the dark matter is charged under some hidden gauge group. And so you need two dark matter of the right color to meet each other to annihilate. So you just have this 1/n suppression compared to what you naively expect.
Different dots
are
different ends.
Yeah, exactly. So they go from 2 to 100. So I've been very generous here. And, but still, you cannot go very far from a WIMP, even if you are so extreme in N. So that was the point of the plot. And what I'm going to talk about today instead...
Sorry, why is that? Let's assume there's no bound on it.
Yeah.
So isn't that equivalent to changing like the Wimpless miracle? What changes? Why can't you move down? So why does it saturate from 1 to 100? Is it bounced from...
Well, because you can have the same cap, because...
It's
a definition.
Yeah.
It's a matter of definition.
Yeah, you're right. You have to take into account that if you have too many degrees of freedom, this will be... Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
you have to fix it too.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. That's the point.
Yeah, so finally, this concludes the well-known part of the talk. And so looking at this plane, if you're completely naive, you might wonder whether theory is telling us more than experiment, whether we are really confined to these lines in the plane. But if you think about it for 30 seconds, the answer is obviously no. I mean, the only thing that we're doing in all these models is that we are we have two parameters and we are fixing the ratio. So that's why we're living on this line. So it shouldn't be at all surprising that it's very easy to write a model that can live anywhere in this plane, essentially. And that's what I'm going to talk about today. So this area here pertains to forbidden channel annihilations, but also the other models live in a similar parameter space.
You got the models that are never thermalized, right? So your gray area becomes white again below.
Try that again?
You go to the models which have low WIMPs, not WIMPs, but very interacting mass particles that never thermalized.
Ah, yeah.
So
yeah.
So the gray becomes white again after some if you go down vertically, right? Because then it depends on the horizon.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. I didn't want to be completely general and show you everything. Here I'm talking about only thermal relics. I haven't even mentioned asymmetric dark matter that will live somewhere here. Yeah, I completely agree, but I mean, it was just to give an idea of how this model of thermal dark matter compares to the other models of thermal dark matter. Okay, so having said this, let's go to forbidden itself. This was work with Josh Ruderman at NYU, done last year. And well, the basic idea, as I said before, was already discussed by Kristen Sekel a couple of decades ago, and it's incredibly simple. So we just imagine that dark matter is annihilating into something that it's slightly heavier than itself. And this means that the process at zero temperature is kinematically forbidden. But in the early universe, it can proceed by sampling the tails of the Boltzmann velocity distribution. So it's not surprising that the thermally average cross-section, compared to what you would naively expect, has an exponential suppression. And this exponential suppression depends, of course, on the temperature and on the mass difference between the dark matter and whatever it's annihilating into. So already from here, it's kind of clear why you can cover all this parameter space. You just have another parameter on which the relic density depends exponentially. So to give you some more details about this model, the phenomenology, and why we think it's interesting, let me focus on something concrete rather than the general mechanism. And I'm going to think about a model that is already known in its known forbidden limit, which is that of dark matter being a fermion charged under some U1 dark and the U1 dark gauge boson. And I'm going to imagine that the dark matter is slightly lighter than this dark gauge boson, and I'm going to call delta the relative mass difference. And in this model, there are four interesting processes. The two on the left are there no matter what you do. You cannot get rid of them. So we're always going to have whatever sets the relic density and dark matter self-interactions. And then there's the interaction between the dark matter and the standard model. And here, you might wonder whether it's possible to set the kinetic mixing between the dark photon and the standard model photon to zero with no consequences. And the answer is no. So as long as the kinetic mixing is on, then, and by on, I mean large enough, so larger than 10 to the minus 9, 10 to the minus 10, then the standard model and the dark sector are in thermal equilibrium for most of the history of the universe, and both their temperatures scale in the usual way with one inverse power of the scale factor. Let's say that now I set the kinetic mixing to zero, or smaller than 10 to the minus 10. Then what happens is that processes of this type are in equilibrium at some point in the history of the universe, and they are converting effectively mass into kinetic energy in the dark sector. And this is happening because the dark sector has a mass gap. There is no massless, there are no massless particles in the dark sector, and it undergoes this phase at some point, and this was noticed by Lawrence Hall and collaborators in the 90s. And the net effect of this process is that the dark sector is not heating up, but it's cooling down much more slowly than the standard model. So it's cooling down only logarithmically.
So I was going to ask, and I just noticed on your slide, that you're assuming there's no cross coupling between there's no thermal equilibrium between our sector and that sector. Because in principle, it would.
Yeah, I'm going to consider two possibilities. One in which there is this coupling, mm-hmm. and one in which I add dark radiation to the dark sector. So yeah, so essentially, exactly. So what happens is this, and at some point, the dark sector becomes exponentially hotter than the standard model and messes up structure formation. At the time, it was seen as an opportunity, but today, the measurements are good enough that we cannot play this game anymore. And so from this, you might conclude that you need this coupling, and that's what some people concluded, but it's not really true, because you can do something equivalent to the standard model in the dark sector. You can just add a very light particle that behaves as radiation and couple it to the dark photon with a small coupling. So it has to be small enough that doesn't dominate the annihilations, but large enough that this process is in thermal equilibrium for most of the history of the universe. And there is a big range for this coupling where this happens, and I'll show you later. But the bottom line is that if you add this radiation, then the dark sector looks exactly like the standard model, and its temperature is again going to scale in the usual way, and everything is fine and nice. And so, as I just said, I'm going to show you both cases. One in which you have dark radiation in the dark sector and no thermal contact with the standard model, in which case it will be possible to go as low as a keV in dark matter mass, but the only signals come from dark matter self interactions. And then I'm going to show you also this other case in which there is thermal contact and bounds on an effective limit the dark matter mass to be order MeV, but there are many more signals, direct and indirect detection, all the usual dark photon signatures, and of course self interactions are still possible.
It's actually what, if you saturate the bound, then effective is a bad name, because yes, for CD it's ineffective, and effectively lower effective, right? Because it hits the electrons and gammas, but cools the neutrinos. But for helium 4, it's a positive and effective, right? Because it pushes the inverse faster, so ineffective is a bad name.
Well, I mean, I just mean, so in this case it would be BBN, so I meant the measurement of Hubble at BBN.
Sure.
That's what I meant.
But what I'm saying is not anymore encoded in one matter. It's not that effective, so it might be.
Well, I mean, okay. What I meant, all I wanted to say is that I don't want new relativistic degrees of freedom floating around in too large numbers. And that the first time when I encounter a problem is BBN, and and that's all Hubble. Maybe that's the more precise way of saying it. Okay, so before discussing these two cases, their phenomenology, et cetera, just one word on why having this dark radiation is not a problem. And the reason is that, so let's imagine that we reheat the dark sector and the standard model at the same temperature, and then they're not in thermal contact anymore, and I just let the temperature evolve as usual with conservation of entropy. Then what happens is that the ratio of the dark sector temperature to the standard model photon temperature is always smaller than one, not by a lot, but all the observables that we measure are sensitive to large powers of this ratio, and we check that everything is okay. I'm not gonna go into the details, but even if you add this new EV particle to the dark sector, you're still not excluded.
See, this is assuming that you have fixed the dark matter particle in the dark sector to be dark matter.
No, I mean, I'm just, that doesn't.
I'm confused because the thermal equilibrium here? Or
no,
no. This
no.
is general, right?
Yes.
So, but how do you start with initial abundance? Here you're, no, you're setting the temperature equal to 1 and just calculate what happens with
yeah,
the
exactly.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just reheating the dark sector at the same level as the standard model. Okay, so having said this, let's go into the details now. So first we have the forbidden annihilation. Here the story is exactly the same as what I told you at the beginning with that very simple picture. You can write down the Boltzmann equation for the dark matter, and you have a piece that looks like the forbidden annihilations and a piece that looks like the inverse process. In equilibrium, the right-hand side is zero, and we can use this fact to obtain an exact formula for the thermally averaged annihilation cross-section for the forbidden process, which is just proportional to the one for the inverse process times some equilibrium number density, and in the end what you get is precisely what I sketched at the beginning. So you have what you would naively expect for a kinematically allowed process with decoupling over the mass squared times this exponential. And this was all very simple, but Grist and Seckel didn't really do this, and they had some approximation that broke down for delta larger than 5 to 10%. Instead, this formula is exact and can be used for any delta, and that's what we're using in the following together with numerical computations. If you want the same statement pictorically, you can draw the forbidden diagrams, and that's equal to the inverse process times the exponential, just as I already said. So finally, you can see, again, this exponential dependence on the mass difference. As long as the dark photon is lighter than the dark matter, the relic density roughly doesn't depend on the mass difference, and then it starts depending exponentially on it. This was done with Micromegas. We checked with the analytical formula. Everything is nice. And the bottom line is just that you can start with a dark matter that is much lighter and strongly coupled than normally allowed, and then bring up the relic density with this exponential. Finally, before getting to something more interesting, let me spend a word on tuning and deltas and things like that. So you might worry that I need to tune delta to get the right relic density. And this would be true if I was thinking about weak scale dark matter. But as you take the dark matter mass to be smaller and smaller, keeping the coupling large, as in these curves here, you need a delta of order 1 to get the right relic density. So really, this mechanism wants to live in a light dark matter parameter space. And all the dark sectors I'm talking about are rather natural, have one mass scale and order 1 mass splittings. And you can see it here. So the different colors are different values of the dark sector coupling, and here you have the dark matter mass from kV to 10 GeV. Okay, so let's get to the phenomenology now. As I said before, self-interactions are something that we really cannot make go away in this model. They're there, no matter whether it's in thermal contact with the standard model or not. And usually, in most models for thermal dark matter, they are unobservably small. So what's interesting for astrophysics, for the too big to fail problem or the core versus gas problem, is orders of magnitude larger than what you need for thermal freeze out. However, in our case, the ratio between these two processes is precisely the exponential we've been talking about for a while. So it's natural to have this ratio be many orders of magnitude. And in fact, if you look at the parameter space, for example, in the case where there's no thermal contact with the standard model, you can see that there is already an exclusion for self-interactions, which is the red shaded area. And there is even a range given roughly by this red dotted line, which corresponds to what would be interesting to solve the two problems I mentioned before, so too big to fail and core versus cusp. Of course, this is all very fuzzy, it comes from astrophysics simulation and observation, but the main point here is that it's natural in these models to have very large self-interactions, and that's a signature that we cannot take away from them. The other regions in the plot are not as interesting. I'm just going to mention the fact that up here, you can still find values of the parameter that give you the right relic density, but delta is so large that you are reverting to a simple regime. So the dark photon becomes heavier than two dark matter particles, and what's set in the relic density is really 4 to 2 and not forbidden anymore. So really forbidden lives in this big funnel here, and down here you overclose, up here you transition to SIM. Okay, finally, the rest of the phenomenology comes from the interaction with the standard model. And so now I'm considering the case in which the kinetic mixing is larger than some value, and I'll show you right now what's this value. So here I'm showing you again dark matter mass up to an MeV and kinetic mixing of the dark photon. Down here, the kinetic mixing is so small that the standard model and the dark sector are not in thermal contact. Up here, it's so large that annihilations to two electrons dominate over the forbidden annihilations. And you see that there is a large parameter space where forbidden happen naturally. So you have many orders of magnitude in kinetic mixing in which what's set in the relic density are forbidden annihilations. And this also gives you an idea of the other case. So when I'm adding the dark radiation to the dark sector and setting the coupling of the dark photon to the dark radiation to be small, what I mean by small is precisely this. So it should live in this range. Again, large enough to have thermal contact, but not so large that the annihilations dominate. Okay, so this defines the parameter space. What's more interesting are two of these signals. The first one is direct detection. So right now, direct detection lives in this small corner of parameter space, but from next year, Super CDMS is going to start taking data and explore a much bigger chunk.
I believe maybe CREST too will improve the upper corner, right? In the switch between think and.
This is not. Yeah, I updated it last time a few months ago, so I might have missed the. Might have missed something.
Uses project, right? Press 2 is a result.
I don't know.
Yeah, but so, I mean, what's interesting for me is that this is the time. So this kind of improvement is happening now, and there are many other proposals on the table. One would be this electron scattering story here. So there's a lot going on the experimental side for light dark matter. And I think it's interesting to start thinking about these kind of models to at least understand whether they are as plausible as weak scale models or not. Other than this, let me mention also the CMB bound here. And this is the usual bound from energy injection into the CMB, which usually kills thermal relics below roughly 10 GeV. And that's what you see here, the fact that the gray region and the purple region intersect means that if you had a usual thermal relic, it would be excluded by this bound. But in our case, the annihilation that set the relic density shut down exponentially with temperature. So at this time, they're completely negligible. And that's how we evade the bound, which, however, can probe.
Can you assume something about this delta, or are you just analyze over
it? Yeah, so in this plot, I'm fixing it to give the right relic density.
Okay.
So I'm fixing the coupling to some value, and that's it.
But does it change? Yeah. But does it change if you change data?
So if I change the coupling, it delta changes logarithmically in the coupling.
Ah, so it's not
very easy. Yeah. But if I fix the coupling and I change delta, then the relic density changes exponentially with delta. So. Yeah, so other than to say that we can evade this bound that most thermal dark matter models cannot evade, the other interesting thing is that there is, however, a bound on the parameter space, and this is also going to improve a stage 4, even though not dramatically, maybe by a factor of a few. So the bottom line is that I think we have a very simple model in which the dark matter doesn't necessarily have to be at the weak scale, which has plenty of phenomenology. And I think it's at least just looking at the dark matter side, at least as plausible as WIMPs. And this is just the first one of the three mechanisms I wanted to talk about. Now I will very briefly also tell you about co-annihilation and this new freeze-out mechanism called that we call co-scattering for the moment. And this is, again, work in progress with Josh and Francesco D'Eramo.
So, just
turning
to the previous slide. So, if the mass is like 1 GeV, and is there going to be some accumulation of these things in the sun? Because it's comparable to the mass of the proton. It scatters them and probably with a cross section much larger than the weak cross section.
Well, the fact is that the cross section, so the cross section with which it scatters with the proton is set by epsilon, not the relic band, and not. So in the end, it looks like a wimp from that perspective, because so this line would be where you get your thermal abundance from this epsilon, right? So all the parameter space that I'm considering is one where the cross section with the standard model is smaller.
That's also true for hard scatterings. Soft scatterings, it will be larger cross section because you have a light mediator, you make the photon.
It's not that light, right?
Well,
it's
not
the
standard model.
Oh, yeah,
it's true that I have a light mediator of the order of the psi mass, but at the same time, I have a very small cavern. So the effective cross section for this process is smaller than if I had a Z mediating it.
Not in the sun, the cross section for a single scattering, the single soft scattering is going to be higher here.
Well,
there's no difference between a soft scattering, because this is the mass of the mediator is the same as the mass of the.
The only big difference is in self-interaction. So if there was already some dark matter density in the sun, then it would be much easier to capture it. But from the perspective of the interaction with ordinary matter, as I said, it's no different from a WIMP in this case. So if you consider this other case, the other case where epsilon is zero, it just cannot accumulate. But having said this, I'm not sure what's the full answer to the question. So if you know what cross section you need for some accumulation, I can answer, but otherwise, I don't know. Maybe it's possible. Okay, so finally, let me tell you about the other two mechanisms. I will be very fast on co-annihilation because it's no different from forbidden. And then I will tell you a bit more about co-scattering, which we think it's something new. Okay, so I will start immediately with a concrete example, which is a small deformation of the previous one. So in this case, I'm going to imagine that the dark matter is this particle chi, and then I still have in the dark sector the same two particles as before. And this time, I want psi to be a bit heavier than chi. And I'm also going to imagine that chi is initially neutral under the dark gauge group, but mixes a little bit with psi. So in this model, I have two classes of processes. The first one is whatever is keeping chi and psi in equilibrium, which can be processes of this kind or even psi decays. And then we also have psi-psi annihilations. And I'm assuming that this mixing is so small that chi-chi and chi-psi annihilations don't matter much. And in this setting, again, what happens is that chi is in equilibrium with psi, and then at some point psi freezes out, and at the same time also chi freezes out. And effectively, the net result of this is that the annihilation cross-section that matters for the relic density is again exponentially suppressed, this time by the relative mass difference between psi and chi. The reasons are different from forbidden. I'm not going to tell you why this happens, both because it's better known and because it's not super interesting. But if you want to ask, of course, I'm happy to say more. But the bottom line is that the parametrics of this model are exactly the same as forbidden. So you can play the same game and have very similar phenomenology, and again, get the right relic density for dark matter masses that are much smaller than the weak scale, even if this coupling is large. What's more interesting is to consider a variation of this setup. So normally, what I said before happens. So this process always freezes out before this other process. And the reason is just that typically when people think about coannihilation, they think about coannihilation in the standard model or the MSSM. And this dark photon here is really a light particle. It's an electron or a photon. And so this diagram is exponentially suppressed compared to this one in the early universe. And this is also what Christian Seckel had in mind. However, if you really look at these kind of models, it's very natural to expect the dark photon to be as heavy as psi and everything to have roughly the same mass scale. If this happens, there is no exponential suppression anymore. And actually, this diagram, or even the decays, is what is suppressed from this small mixing I was talking about before. And in practice, if you just look at the parameter space, you find that, sure, coannihilation is a big fraction of it. Also, ordinary WIMPs are a big fraction of it. But there is a new region that I think people have not considered before. What's freezing out are these kind of processes. So in the red region, psi and chi freeze out together. In the blue region, chi freezes out first, and then psi freezes out. And you might say, sure, whatever. It doesn't really matter. But let me tell you why it makes a big difference. So what I'm saying is that if you step back and forget about all the complications of the model, what we have is, again, a very simple setup in which you have a diagram like this with the dark matter coming in and three legs in equilibrium. And in case you're wondering, semi-annihilation is the case in which you have three dark matters. So, and yeah, semi-annihilations are parametrically similar to a WIMP, while this parametrically is completely different. So let's write down the Boltzmann equation for this kind of processes. Again, it's very simple. The only difference compared to the usual case is that instead of two powers of dark matter number density, you have one power. And so what matters for freeze out is the number density of this new particle X that in our case was the dark photon. So you do, as usual, sudden freeze out, neglect logarithmic dependencies. And what you get is that the relic density now depends on 1 over the annihilation cross section to this funny power of a ratio of masses. Compared to the usual case, you get this exponential factor. And the reason is very simple. It's just that here you have an exponential of the X mass, but the relic density knows about the dark matter mass. So you can, it's very simple.
The mass of dark matter is larger than smaller, right?
Yeah, so precisely. So this ratio is not very far from one, and you might say that the two things are close to each other, but really it's not true. So, for example, WIMPs, yeah, what I was about to say is precisely this, that being close to one but not exactly one makes a big difference. So if you think about SIMP, SIMP is this with 1/2 here. And it changes the scale you consider natural from the weak scale to 100 MeV, to the QCD scale.
It cannot be larger than 3, right?
It cannot be larger than actually, well, 3 is even too much. So really,
doing crossing and putting the one that you scatter on the final state, right?
Oh, but I'm thinking about this, okay. Right? So with the dark photon and the dark matter coming in and another dark photon and the psi coming out. So really what you don't want is the dark photon mass to be larger than the psi mass, otherwise you have some funny combination of this case and forbidden, right? So I think that there is a stronger upper bound than that on the dark photon mass, which is the psi mass, which in the end is not much larger than the chi mass because of this, again. So, yeah, I mean, it's a bit involved to put everything together without writing it down, but the bottom line is that, roughly speaking, you don't expect that ratio to be bigger than 1 and not much smaller than 0.2. So in this plot, it gets to 0.3 something, but for different dark matter masses, it can get as low as 0.2. So just to have an idea, you can imagine that this ratio goes from 0.2 to 1. And so As I said before, roughly speaking, this means that you don't have a preferred scale for the dark matter mass anymore, even if you don't rely on the exponentials I was talking about before anymore. And for 1/2, the scale would be 100 MeV. For 1, it would be a WIMP, but you can go lower up to 0.2 and get 2 MeV maybe. So again, in the end, the end result is not very different from what I told you about for forbidden or co-annihilation, but this is a bit newer in the sense that, strangely enough, this type of result was not considered before, and you can really call it a fourth exception to the computation of dark matter relic density. But the bottom line, more in general, of all I've said today is just that I think one should not take too seriously WIMPs, even in the smaller subset of thermal dark matter models. So even if you restrict yourself to the point of considering only thermally produced dark matter, still there is no preferred mass scale. You can do more or less whatever you want, even if the dark matter couplings to whatever it's annihilating to are large. So to conclude, I showed you a few cases in which dark matter annihilations require finite temperature. In these cases, the relic density depends exponentially on some parameters of the theory, and it's very easy to have a dark matter mass that is exponentially lighter than the weak scale without making it exponentially weakly coupled. And what I told you in the course of the talk are all very general mechanisms. The model I've chosen are examples, but one can imagine to model build a lot in these directions. And there are a few things that we've been thinking about, but who knows if we'll have time to do. For example, one could do forbidden annihilations that are P-wave instead of S-wave, which would change this plot a little bit in the sense that a PR indirect detection would become important while now the CMB bound dominates. Or one could imagine to combine SIMPs and forbidden, SIMPs and co-annihilation, even forbidden and co-annihilation, or one could imagine to build models in which these forbidden annihilations do not happen in a secluded sector, but are connected to the standard model. And a nice feature of this would be that you essentially predict the dark matter mass for a large range of couplings. So if you imagine, I don't know, that the dark matter is annihilating mainly into muons, you would know that the dark matter mass is order 100 MeV, and it would have a very characteristic phenomenology. If you couple it to quarks, the same. So you're going to have rare meson decays, a very precise prediction for the direct detection cross-section, and so on. So as I said multiple times, I think these are relatively interesting general mechanisms, and one can imagine to use them in many new ways. And maybe the bottom line of everything is that it's good that eventually experimentalists have started to focus on lighter dark matter parameter space, because there's not a lot of good reasons to only look at WIMPs. Thanks.
So how would you probe the Coscatelli region?
Yeah, so in the end, it would look similar to forbidden and co-annihilation. The only difference is that what kind of parameters in the dark sector you need to get the right relic density. But then, the story of self-interactions being large is still going to be true. So this essentially is what's guaranteed. In all these models, we're going to have large self-interactions. So the first thing to do to see if they're there is to improve our astrophysics simulation, which doesn't seem an easy task, but it would be the first thing to do. And then if one is lucky and this coupling is there and it's large enough, then again, one should keep searching for dark photons, improve the CMB bound, and extend direct detection more and more.
But in the other model, there is an additional particle, right? There are three. There's dark photons, dark matter, and psi.
Yeah.
In the post-Hubble thing.
Yeah, but in practice, what happens is that now there's only chi. So psi is a bit heavier, so its relic density is exponentially smaller.
Is it still stable, though? Is it stable as well?
Well, it depends. In some regions of planetary space, it will decay to chi and dark photon. In some others, it will be stable. But even when it's stable, its relic density is exponentially smaller than that of chi. And the dark photon, for the reasons we said before, so the fact that you need some thermal equilibrium with some radiation, well, no, now I'm not finding, okay, yeah. So it's decaying in the end, either to standard model or to these new particles. So in the end, in all these models today, you have only the dark matter, and you can try to produce the dark photon.
So it's falsifiable as well, also, right? If you start seeing some gamma rays from dwarfs where the dark matter is very slow, right? From when you identify that it's from self-annihilation, right? In this model, you cannot have it, right?
Yeah, forbidden, yes.
Yeah.
Because you need only, here you see the possibly the indirect detection only when the two clusters collide, right? At a high speed, right?
Yeah, unless this cavern is large enough. So for example, up here, you would see the dark matter in indirect detection. From annihilation.
If you see it through annihilation, then it's probably not that.
Well, it's probably not, it's not this, but it might be here. Let's
Probably more just through one millimeter.
So in this case I agree. So if you set the kinetic mixing to be small, then that would falsify it. But if you turn it on, well, actually I think it might. So in this S wave case, it would also falsify it because the CMB bound is stronger there. So. But if I had to, if I wrote down something like this for a P-wave annihilation, then it might be possible to see.
Is there a way to cover all this parameter space?
I think the new dark photon experiments are gonna cover something up here, and I'm not sure if there is any hope to get all the way here. I'm sure that super CDMS can improve. I mean, if they go at larger masses, they can.
Isn't it which new, the other beam dumps, or what are the new experiments?
The new experiments are, there are other beam dumps, there are missing momentum experiments, but I think that they cannot get all the way here.
But to get there, you probably need to invest the equivalent of United States economy.
Super diversity.
Yeah.
I don't think there is a strong case for that either.
No,
you're on one dump, I think.
No, maybe it would be more interesting to think about self-interactions, because here you really think about huge cross-sections. I mean, this line here, as I said before, is like a KV mediator with order one coupling. I mean, it's strong. I mean, it's like QCD after it confines better and QCD after it confines.
But you'll never know anything, right? You can always fake any signal with variance or...
Well, I'm hoping that Moore's law is going to put variance into the simulations before we die.
Any last questions?
Let's think about that again.